Good afternoon. The Education and Employment Committee will now come to order. Missy, please call the roll.
Chair Latvala?
Here.
Vice Chair McLean?
Here.
Committee Whip Andrade?
Here.
Ranking Member Williams?
Here.
Representative Lucas?
Here.
Representative Arrington?
Here.
Representative Bell?
Here.
Representative Barrero?
Here.
Representative Bush?
Here.
Representative Fine?
Here.
Representative Harding?
Here.
Representative Hawkins?
Here.
Representative Hunshofsky?
Here.
Representative Lamarcka?
Here.
Representative Mariano?
Here.
Representative Maney?
Here.
Representative McCurdy?
Here.
Representative Morales?
Present.
Representative Trabulsi?
Here.
Representative Tuck?
Here.
Representative Valdez?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Let the record show that a quorum is present. Please remember to silence all electronic devices. Be recognized by the chair before addressing the committee or the presenters. And remember to push the microphone button after you have been recognized, as the green light on your microphone no longer represents a live mic. Good afternoon, members. Did y'all watch any good football games over the weekend? Go Bucks. Welcome to the Education and Employment Committee. Today, we will continue to the discussion on the workforce and education. Last committee meeting, we heard why an integrated education and workforce system is beneficial to students and workers, and an example of how one state has made significant progress in statewide integrated system. Today, we will focus on Florida. The first presentation before the committee will focus on the structure of the Florida workforce system, and the second presentation will focus on areas of opportunity to enhance the workforce education systems for the job seekers. Our first presenter is Mark Bard, Chief Legislative Analyst with the Office of Program Policy Analysts and Government Accountability. You are recognized, Mr. Bard.
Good afternoon, Chair Latvala, members of the committee. I'm Mark Baird, and thank you for the opportunity to present to you some foundational information on workforce development policy. Workforce development has a broad scope of services crossing over multiple federal and state statutes, agencies, rules, and regulations. It all culminates in a local delivery system that involving public and private stakeholders. It's a complex landscape, but we hope this presentation makes it a bit easier to understand. First, I'll describe the federal and legal and administrative framework for workforce development. Then I'll review the structure of Florida's workforce system from governance and administration to service delivery. After that, I'll provide some data regarding workforce funding and compare federal accountability measures used by the various workforce entities. Let's start with the federal framework. Florida's workforce system aligns with federal requirements that are implemented through four laws. The most comprehensive law is the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, known as WIOA, which I'll be discussing in greater detail throughout this presentation. The others are the Perkins Act, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, specifically its employment and training program, and the Training and Technical Assistance Program under Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, or TANF. The workforce development components of SNAP and TANF involve training and employment assistance to meet program requirements and attain self-sufficiency. Taken together, these make up the federal framework that shapes how states deliver workforce development services. The administrative responsibilities for these programs are primarily spread across offices at three federal agencies, the Departments of Labor, Education, and Health and Human Services. Taking a closer look at WIOA, this act was passed in 2014, replacing the Workforce Investment Act, or WIA, and its goals are focused on building a workforce system that encourages collaboration among federal, state, and local entities. These entities aren't just government agencies, they also include education, businesses, community agencies, labor unions, and nonprofits. WIOA has five titles, and I'll be showing how Florida's programs tie into each. Title I, Workforce Development Activities, authorizes job training programs for unemployed and underemployed individuals, and it establishes a one-stop delivery system to facilitate access to the programs. I'll discuss one-stops in a moment, but the intent is for job seekers to be able to walk in the door of a one-stop career center and be connected to workforce services that are relevant to their needs. Title I includes three training programs, adult, youth, and dislocated worker, through which individuals may receive funding via individual training accounts, which allow them to enroll in post-secondary occupation education programs. Title II is adult education and family literacy. These programs offer adult basic literacy education, adult high school courses, and GED preparation with the intent of preparing individuals for the transition to post-secondary training and employment. It also covers programs for English language learners, as well as incarcerated individuals hoping to make a better employment transition after completing their sentences. Title III incorporates Wagner-Peiser Services, which is an employment assistance program that originated in the 1930s. These services have the goal of matching job seekers to employers, and this title folds these services into the one-stop system. Services include job fairs, resume assistance, interview preparation, and online job boards like Employ Florida. Title IV covers vocational rehabilitation, or VR. This title provides funding to states for programs serving individuals facing barriers to employment due to physical or mental disabilities. Services may include occupational therapy or adaptive technologies. And Title V is just general technical provisions for the transition from WIA to WIOA. Besides WIOA, three other major laws and programs shape workforce policy. The first is the Perkins Act, which is the principal source of federal funding to the states for secondary and post-secondary programs for career and technical education, usually known as CTE. These funds are allocated to school districts and Florida College System institutions as supplemental funding for their CTE program offerings, which include secondary CTE courses, career academies, courses leading to industry certifications, post-secondary certificate programs, and associate in science degree programs. Next is the SNAP Employment and Training Program, which provides SNAP participants with instruction and work experience so they can obtain regular employment and ideally economic self-sufficiency. It can also help participants meet conditional work requirements. And finally, there's the TANF Training and Technical Assistance Program. Many recipients of TANF benefits have to participate in work activities to maintain eligibility, and state agencies provide services aimed at bolstering employment among recipients. This program was established to provide training and technical assistance to state agencies to facilitate their employment programs for TANF recipients. Now I'll move on to describe the landscape of workforce development in Florida. The system serves two types of customers, individuals and businesses. Any individual seeking a job or promotion can benefit from less intensive employment services, while some may require more individualized training or support to attain their employment goals. For these customers, programs include adult general education, or AGE, CTE, adaptive technologies, and occupational therapy. For businesses, workforce development programs can help employers with recruitment, on-the-job training, and retraining programs designed to prevent employee layoffs. Florida's state plan, required by WIOA, includes the core partners that will appear in this slide. Cooperation among these entities helps to develop the state's workforce marketplace by linking employers and job seekers to labor market information, employment opportunities, education, and training. Under the governor sits the state's Workforce Development Board, which is also the board of directors of CareerSource Florida, whose professional staff helps implement board directives. DEO administers workforce programs through financial management services, data collection and reporting, technical assistance, and program monitoring. Both DEO and CareerSource Florida play roles in overseeing the 24 local workforce development boards, which administer the programs and services in their local regions, including their one-stop career centers. The Department of Education administers AGE and CTE programs through school districts and the Florida College System, as well as services for individuals with disabilities offered by VR and Blind Services. Private post-secondary institutions also deliver occupational education through WIOA Title I. Other entities not shown on this chart play various roles in the system. For example, DCF coordinates with DEO to administer SNAP and TANF workforce services. Both CareerSource Florida and DEO play a role in the oversight of local workforce board operations. CareerSource Florida coordinates the development of the WIOA state plan, reviews local board WIOA plans, issues policy documents, and provides strategic direction for multi-agency efforts. DEO provides training and guidance to local boards, serves as the state's fiscal agent in administering funds, approves local board budgets, and in tandem with CareerSource Florida, reviews local board WIOA plans. Note, however, that local boards have discretion within the parameters of federal and state policy to determine how they implement their programs. The 24 local workforce development boards, through their one-stop career centers, offer resources to assist job seekers in finding and retaining employment through education, training, career services, and support services. They also help employers recruit, hire, and train staff. These local boards partner with educational institutions, employers, nonprofit organizations, and community action partners to accomplish these goals. These local boards also perform administrative duties, including developing and implementing local WIOA plans, providing program and fiscal oversight, and tracking and reporting program outcomes. In fiscal year 2018-19, the 24 local boards responded to more than 430,000 customer requests. Florida has 100 one-stop career centers, which deliver a variety of workforce services. Services provided to individuals are designed to help job seekers identify their employment goals, acquire skills, overcome barriers, and find a job. Services provided to employers include skills training and recruitment. Each workforce region has at least one comprehensive center that provides on-site access to more expansive services by being co-located with partners such as SNAP and VR. When a job seeker arrives at a career center, they will go through multiple steps designed to determine eligibility for applicable workforce programs. The flowchart on this slide will depict the typical intake process used at a career center. This entire process may take place over several days. Individuals may receive basic services, such as access to computers for job application submissions or assistance in writing a resume, writing and printing a resume without going through this intake process, regardless of eligibility. The process may begin with a general orientation presentation or video, followed by filling out intake forms that staff use to determine program eligibility. Individuals seeking Wagner-Peiser or WIOA services will register with Employ Florida, which is the state's case management system for those two programs. The cases of SNAP and TANF recipients receiving employment and training services are managed through the one-stop service tracking system, which links DEO and DCF data. Eligibility for veterans programs is determined early in the process so veterans can be fast-tracked to those services. If the customer needs services from a partner agency or program, staff will refer the customer to that service, which may or may not be co-located at the one-stop center. Even from a small sample of five workforce regions, we found that boards vary in how they communicate, document, and track external referrals. Depending on the customer's goals, staff may administer assessments, which vary, but may include basic skills tests, and interest inventories. Customers then complete an individual plan for employment that establishes goals and the means to achieve them. Depending on the customer's goals, needs, and program eligibility, training and placement services are provided. For example, an unemployed adult without a high school diploma may be referred to an adult education center to prepare to take the GED. Placement in a job marks program exit, but local boards are required to provide WIOA training recipients with follow-up services for 1 year after job placement to ensure employment retention. The Department of Education is responsible for overseeing the workforce education programs implemented by Florida's school districts and the Florida College System, including both AGE and CTE programs. AGE programs teach basic literacy skills and prepare students for attaining a high school diploma through passing the GED or graduating from an adult high school. Each CTE program is aligned to one of 17 specific career clusters, such as hospitality and tourism, for example, and may lead to completion of an industry certification, career certificate, or associate in science degree. AGE programs receive funding through WIOA Title II, and CTE receives direct funding through the Perkins Act. But note that post-secondary CTE programs will also receive WIOA Title I dollars indirectly through individual training accounts. I'll now turn to an overview of workforce development funding. We'll start with a very high-level roll-up of state and federal funding by agency. The public investment in 2018-19 was over $1.5 billion. The education sector received the highest levels of funding, and it was predominantly from the state. DEO and Blind Services workforce development programs are federally funded, and VR is predominantly, but not completely, funded by federal dollars. CareerSource directly administers two programs, one state-funded and one federally funded, and these funds flow to contracted training reimbursements. Generally, funding flows through state-level agencies and is allocated to local agencies. For example, DEO program funding flows down to local workforce boards via formula-based models. Before taking a deeper dive into funding, a few items to consider when comparing funding levels and participant numbers across programs. First, there's a wide range of services among the programs, from assistance with resume writing or interview preparation to payments for tuition, fees, and books and supplies. Naturally, tuition will have a much higher cost per participant than resume preparation. Calculations of funding per participant by dividing the dollars by the number of participants are comparable only to the degree that the services are comparable. The data I'm showing you today is public funding only. Some sectors have other funding sources. For example, post-secondary institutions collect tuition and fees. Therefore, funding amounts are incomplete estimates of total funding for the education sector. Because state funding for post-secondary education is appropriated through lump sums to institutions, we had to estimate the amount of funding allocated to workforce education programs by analyzing expenditure reports to calculate the proportion of spending that was allocated to those programs. And finally, individuals who enroll in multiple programs within a particular category would be counted more than once, so there's likely some duplication within the participant numbers. Among DEO's workforce development programs, WIOA Title I Training Services has the largest amount of federal funding at over $159 million in fiscal year 2018-19, followed by a welfare transition, which is the employment and training services for TANF recipients. And Wagner-Peiser, which has the second largest number of participants among DEO programs behind the Work Opportunity Tax Credit. CareerSource Florida directly administers the Quick Response and Incumbent Worker Training programs. QRT is funded by the state and received $5.7 million in 2018-19. IWT is federally funded and received $4.6 million the same year. In the career and adult education sector, post-secondary CTE programs received the most public funding in 2018-19, followed by AGE and CAPE Act bonus funding for K-12 students earning fundable industry certifications. Secondary CTE had the largest number of participants and received about $34 million in Perkins Act funding in 2018-19. Adult ESOL had the largest enrollment within AGE, and college credit and certificate programs had the largest enrollments among post-secondary CTE programs. In 2018-19, VR programs received $242.4 million, and blind services received $19.6 million. The VR program with the largest number of participants was Transition Youth, and the blind services program with the largest number of participants was the Independent Living Program. Regarding program performance accountability, workforce development programs generally rely on required federal metrics. The first five metrics listed here are the core WIOA measures. They include measures of employment, earnings, credential attainment like degrees and certificates, and skills attained from training. These are reported for WIOA training programs, VR, and adult education. Because Wagner-Peiser is a placement service, it does not have the education, the two education metrics. Blind Services reports all the WIOA measures, but measurable skill gains is currently being reported for baseline data only and does not yet have negotiated targets. SNAP, Employment and Training, reports the three WIOA employment measures only. Perkins Act funding for post-secondary CTE has a set of three federal metrics measuring employment retention and placement, credential attainment, and the enrollment of students in programs that aren't traditional for their gender, for example, women in plumbing programs or men in nursing programs. Unlike the WIOA measures, earnings are not incorporated in the metrics. TANF tracks work participation rates for recipients required to engage in qualifying work activities. In sum, workforce development involves many entities, programs, and services operating within distinct administrative silos under the parameters of federal, state, and local policy, with the ultimate goal of connecting job seekers and employers. That concludes our presentation, and thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, y'all have any questions for Mr. Baird? Representative Valdez, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Baird. I just wanted to clarify a couple of things. Is ABE and AGE the same program?
Mr. Chair.
You're recognized?
Yes. No. The answer is no. ABE is adult basic education, and those are literacy programs that are getting folks up to the point where they could enter adult high school or prepare for the GED. AGE is adult general education, and that's the umbrella that incorporates all the different adult education programs, ABE, adult secondary, ESOL, that incorporates all of them. So AGE is the umbrella category.
Just the big umbrella. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Follow-up, sir?
Yes, ma'am. You're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you. And it may not be the appropriate question to ask you, but just in looking at the presentation, are you saying, would you assess that we may have it's time to address the systemic concerns of being able to streamline potential recipients and to develop our workforce? And if it is, what policies would you might recommend that will help in getting to that transition?
Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Well, we were not directed to make an evaluation. This has a very, very broad scope. But we did, in talking to stakeholders, we did talk to them about the consequences of poor cooperation and communication, and they emphasized the importance of communication across all of these various sectors, all of these various entities, in order to provide services particularly to individuals, but to businesses as well. And we did directly ask the stakeholders we interviewed, in addition to those consequences, what are some things that could be improved? And the sharing of data was something that did pop up across the interviews, is that, the more sharing of information across those various silos that goes on, they will be able to serve folks better. I'll give you a specific example. Many TANF recipients are not required to work under the program, but they may desire to work. So if local workforce boards had the information on those individuals, they could actually reach out to them because they're not being referred automatically through that system between DCF and DEO. It's more of an automated system, and they're being referred as a requirement for the program. And that's just one example. The other thing that popped up is that perhaps some more standardization of intake processes. All the workforce boards, do have a latitude in terms of how they administer their programs, and some of them have their own in-house case management systems in addition to Wagner-Peiser, and many don't. They're using many different types of locally created forms, the tracking of referrals varies, and sometimes it's very informal. It could be someone sitting at someone's desk and they get on the phone and, that's it. So I would say those two things, the increasing of the sharing, and then some level of, some more commonality in terms of the intake and assessment process.
One more follow-up?
Yes, ma'am, you're recognized.
Thank you, sir. My question is, what do you think that moving forward the conversation around equity would look like in these policy decision-making decisions?
You're recognized.
Thank you. If I'm following, and I might need some follow-up there, are you referring to more equitably delivering services to different types of individuals?
Yes, ma'am, you're recognized.
Yes, and considering the diverse state that we have when it's rural, urban, suburban, and so many different aspects of Florida living, that I you still have areas in the state where Wi-Fi is non-existent. So it's, for me, it's equitable access for all in the state of Florida. If we're investing this kind of money to help our workforce, then I'm always thinking about that equitable piece, because it's not equal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about an apple to an apple. It's being able to afford the resources needed in that particular area for that individual so that then they could succeed, if you will. So equity is such a broad topic. And I believe it requires a lot of think tank type of thinking, because equity shows up in many different ways. So in the conversations in department, have you all had that equity conversation, and what would that look like?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir, you're recognized.
Well, this is not something we addressed head on in the project. It was not part of our what we were directed to do in our scope. However, I will say that there is, the state, as you said, regions differ across many different dimensions, and one of the things that popped out, of course, with the pandemic, is the digital divide is one thing. Is to perhaps address that, because we did talk to some of the boards, the local boards, about, well, how have you adapted in the pandemic? And Of course, you know, they've had to go more online. There's less face-to-face. So that could be some aspect. Or at having, you know, more bringing services out to individuals in rural areas, for example, so to be more mobile and adaptable. Rather than, you know, just having centralizing services.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Rep. Lupus, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Dr. Baird. Quick question. So on slide 13, you referenced sort of a difference in how the one-stop centers are collecting data on the referral to partner agencies and programs. What consistent level of service are we seeing across all 100 one-stop center? I mean, if I go to Escambia, is my experience similar to what I would have if I were in Miami-Dade County?
You're recognized.
Thank you. The short answer is I don't know. We did not survey all of the regions, and we did not, and much less the one-stop centers. Just from the five, we talked to a very small sample of the 24, there was a great deal of variety in terms of, you know, a minimal tracking of referrals to having an electronic case management system that was, developed locally that would track these things. One of the ways you can sort of bring all those services together is through co-location. That's something that we were really unable to, VR, Voc Rehab, was able to tell us where they're co-located with career centers. And we were able to find out from DCF, but we were not able to get a comprehensive view of, okay, here are all the one-stop centers, and for each one-stop center, here are the various agencies and services and programs that are co-located at each one-stop. Right now, that data, it doesn't exist. It's not being collected systematically as far as we know.
You have a follow-up? Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is it your opinion that the one-stop centers should be doing sort of comprehensive data collection on the referrals?
You recognize?
Well, I think it would be something that would make their management systems better, and they would be able to understand where their folks are going, and it would also make for better ability to follow up. It would certainly, I think it would, I mean, it makes them smarter, and it makes them be able to operate in a smarter way.
Members, any other questions? Yes, ma'am. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned, and I don't remember what slide it was. I did not make a notation, but there was a slide where you talked about estimating funds and future budgets. Can you give an example of what that looks like? Do you look at salaries of the employees, or do you look at program funding, or what does that look like?
Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. It's nothing that elaborate. It's just that when you look at funding, the way that post-secondary institutions are funded is not, it's not earmarked funds. Like we're giving Brevard College this amount of funding for their adult education programs. They get a lump sum. So we had to take that lump sum, and then we had to figure out approximately how much of it is going to workforce education. So we did that by looking at the expenditure reports and then saying, how much did they spend on those areas? Because they do report that in their financial reporting. And so we took that and we took the percentage that was spent on our target programs and then applied it, backed around, and applied it to the total funding amount to come up with an estimate.
Any other questions? All right, seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
For our next presentation, we will hear from Nicole Washington. Ms. Washington has a diverse background with an expertise in national and state higher education and workforce policy. As such, Nicole is a consultant to this committee and has been working with staff on identifying opportunities to enhance our workforce and education systems. Ms. Washington, you are recognized.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Latvala, Vice Chair McLean, Whip Andrade, Ranking Member Williams, and committee members, for the opportunity to address you today. My name is Nicole Washington, and as Chair Latvala mentioned, I've been working with the brilliant staff in the House, and happy to support the work of this committee as it's incredibly timely for our state's recovery. So as you know, our economy and the world of work are changing at a faster pace than ever. In many ways, COVID-19 accelerated pre-pandemic changes that we were already seeing, whereas jobs are being created and eliminated more quickly. Front-loaded education models are inadequate because individuals are now expected to continue to learn and work throughout their careers. And employers are moving more towards temporary and contract work to meet their needs, which means that the stakes are higher than ever for students, job seekers, and workers to gain and maintain the education and skills needed for work. 2 out of 3 jobs require additional education and training beyond high school. However, not all pathways nor our credentials are created equal. And so individuals need to be savvy in making choices that meet their needs, from financial investments to time investments, making sure they're aligned with their interests and values while also putting them on a path to self-sufficiency. And so states across the nation are recognizing that our decades-old workforce development systems are not equipped to meet these changing needs, are working to modernize and integrate education and workforce systems to increase flexibility, responsiveness, and information flows in order to be more adaptable to the needs of the economy and workers and employers. So I'm gonna spend a few minutes just talking about the experience, delving more into the experience of the worker, the current and future worker, which will build off of the presentation that you just received. So in the prior presentation, you saw a pretty detailed organizational chart of Florida's workforce system, which is a rich and complex, if siloed, ecosystem. The bottom tier of that chart, which is mirrored here, provides an overview of how individuals access the workforce development system to get served. So figuring out how to access the workforce development system is actually the first challenge that an individual might face, especially if he or she has been out of school for a while. Information about the various programs can be accessed online via state-supported programs like Employ Florida or outreach campaigns such as the Department of Education's Get There Florida, which drove people to help people to learn more about career opportunities in their and training in their local neighborhoods. You could walk into a one-stop career center, or you could, that was mentioned earlier, or you can go directly to a training provider, whether it's a school district, a Florida college system, or a private institution, or another training provider. Additionally, workers may have access to additional education and training directly through their employer. In a recent survey actually by the Florida Chamber of Commerce, about 60% of employers provide additional education and training for their employees, and about half of them do it in partnership with either a school, with a college or training center. So the previous presentation provided an insight into the complexity of Florida's workforce system and the number of education, training, and support services available to individuals. This also creates a challenge to individuals looking to gain access to additional education and training because it's hard, because your actual services provided to you largely depend on where exactly you enter the system. So the examples provided here are general pathways because there's not a consistent point of entry to exit experience for Floridians who are either preparing for the workforce or seeking additional education and training to be responsive to the needs of industry that was brought up earlier. Generally, one-stop centers have information and support aligned to federal workforce job training programs, which includes WIOA, other programs for special populations, and potentially SNAP and TANF or other soft services offered either on-site or through referral. Education institutions, on the other hand, will have strong counseling and support related to workforce programs, career pathways, and financial supports offered specifically at their institution. And financial support for workforce programs tends to be limited, especially if you are in a non-degree program. So I won't read this slide, but I do want to highlight a couple of points with an example. In the previous presentation, you heard about the intake process of a job seeker at a one-stop center. For a myriad of reasons, that job seeker may not be eligible for a training voucher to help pay for additional education and training. Over the summer, under the leadership of Governor DeSantis and the Department of Education, Commissioner Corcoran, they allocated CARES Act funds to districts and colleges to offset the cost of rapid credentials, which were specifically short-term credentials to get adults back into work in high-demand areas. Additionally, colleges put up and training centers put up additional support to help individuals in essential programs across the state. An individual who went into a job seeker who went into this one-stop center could have actually been turned away and not been able to receive service without even learning about the additional opportunities through our education system. So communities across the state and states across the nation are all working to better align education and workforce support systems in order to maximize resources and provide more consistent support experience for customers. The goal here is that regardless of where a student or job seeker enters the system, he or she will have access to consistent information, support, about workforce programs to be able to make an informed decision around where he or she would be best served. We do have, and I did mention, and I think the prior presentation mentioned, a plethora of websites that provide information to consumers, but they're not currently all coordinated and may not be helpful to consumers who don't know where to begin to even think about reskilling and upskilling for the jobs of the future. So Florida has an opportunity to really improve the integration of education and workforce services in some of the following ways. Encouraging joint service delivery. So this includes, as was mentioned by the previous presentation, co-location. So in many cases across the state, we see co-location of resources, whether it's at one-stop centers or at colleges, to make sure this co-location means that at one center, you have access to potentially both college education workforce programs and additional service, social service supports that would be offered by the one-stop. In Central Florida, the one-stop center actually partnered with a college campus to co-locate services, which actually improved the performance of both entities. It goes further, as was also mentioned earlier, to encourage common platforms for case management so that individuals have more streamlined referrals and to reduce the duplication of having to figure out or fill out multiple forms and information. So for example, Mississippi has actually implemented a statewide electronic referral process across the state. Another potential opportunity is providing consistent data. So in-demand occupations and programs currently differ across education and workforce systems. Integrating and aligning high-quality data across systems to increase transparency for individuals as it regards to labor market demand, outcomes and for individuals who participate in certain programs, and a better understanding statewide of the credentials that we value in alignment to labor market demand will help individuals make better informed decisions. And information hubs. So what we've seen in certain states, and I believe Nick Moore presented last week on Alabama's information hub, which is we currently have a lot of tools and resources available, but they're not always aligned. And so, and they're not always user-friendly. The state actually captures, as you saw in the previous presentation, lots of information about program participation, out and outcomes for programs. However, that information is not always available to individuals who are actually seeking to make a decision around what program would best serve their needs. And so making that information, providing that information both to the state and to individuals seeking additional education and training would help actually increase our productivity. And finally, coordinated and proactive outreach. It wasn't mentioned earlier, but most of these one stops in all of these programs are dependent upon the individual actually being walking in the door. Whereas as a state, we have a lot of information that we could use to help target individuals that we know could use access to and the supports that are offered by the state. So for example, Tennessee has implemented through an adult education program called ReConnect, an ability for navigators, which actually help reach out to individuals, adults who are seeking additional training, and they actually help them navigate both the education and the social services in order to be able to get re-enrolled in their education and training programs, and they help them through that process. So I just want to note that there's a lot of thought leadership actually already happening across the state on this issue. And I appreciate this committee's effort to accelerate that leadership. This body actually set a vision for Florida to increase our workforce and education systems aligned to industry needs. It called Sail to 60. And so we are continuing to work towards that goal and make sure that Florida's workers have access to high quality information, supports, and services to be able to meet the needs of our economy of today and tomorrow. So it's important that obviously Florida continues to build, uses this opportunity that we have today to build an ecosystem that promotes continuous learning, invests in an agile and resilient workforce, and promotes and provides comprehensive support to enable every worker to participate in the workforce. Mr. Chair, that concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Washington. Members, are there any questions? Ranking Member Williams, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the presentation. Can we go back to slide 3?
I would need...
Where you were stating that at the entry of an individual, they could lose the opportunity for different programs that they may need?
So, Mr. Chair.
Sorry. Yes, ma'am, you're recognized.
So I think, Ranking Member Williams, to the point I was making there is, depending on where you enter the system, if you are a job seeker and you enter through a one-stop center, the services you receive through that one-stop center will be comprehensive under the plethora of programs that one-stop center's purview, which may or may not include programs that are being subsidized on the education side. So the one-stop centers have what lists that they call eligible training providers, which are the lists that they've determined in their region aligned to high demand occupations. And those are the programs that one-stop center would subsidize. And then there's also a statewide list of eligible training providers, but those are only programs that have been approved through Department of Economic Opportunity and Career Source. That is not the full list of programs that would be available at a school district or technical center or college or the college.
That would be one of the partnerships that you were speaking of at that point?
There are partnerships, yes. The partnership Chair.
You're fine, you're recognized.
So the partnership that I mentioned is at actually the College of Central Florida. So they have co-located their one-stop center with their career services at the college. And that has actually improved both the outcomes at the college and for that one-stop center, because you have the connectivity there where a student can now have access to on-site, the work, you know, the WIOA training funds if they're eligible, as well as the career advising supports that the one-stop center has. And then in addition, that individual also has access to whatever tuition subsidies or program supports offered by the college.
Representative Hubshofsky, you are recognized, and I have been practicing.
Thank you, Chair. Well done. just a comment before I ask my question. This sounds so familiar also with the mental health system, where studies have shown that the outcome you get very much depends on where you enter in the system. I have like kind of a two-part question. The first being, is some of the disconnect due to the fact that funding is coming from different sources? And then what would be the best option for this outreach and making sure that people are getting to the place they need to go for the services with them? Is it really the co-locating which might make it more difficult for someone to access it because now it's in a college that might be far away? Or would it be something like where you could go online and you could access it through your library or a local community center, where it would kind of be, that's where you check in, and then depending on what you fill out there, you would then be routed to the best place to give you the services that you need?
Chair. You're recognized.
Thank you. So to the first question regarding the disconnect, it is, I would venture to say that it's probably largely due to funding, because every funding source has a different reporting mechanism. And so that is how those services are provided and reported back. As far as the best option, the example I gave via co-location is not the only possible iteration for co-location. Co-location could mean that services are provided at an early learning center. It could mean that they're provided at a library. It encourages us to think outside of the box around providing community access to these programs via education or directly through workforce development.
Do you have a follow-up? You're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. Is there a possibility of having, like, though, a program where you have that initial entry that then would, or depending on how you fill out, it would be online, so that it could then direct you to the proper place to go, whether it be the one-stop career center or the post-secondary education institution, so that to make sure, like, you have that initial entry point that will then direct you to the right resources?
You're recognized.
Thank you. And to your point, I think that's what I was trying to get at with the idea around an information hub. That would be the sort of one coordinated point of contact for individuals to be able to fill out some initial information and then be routed if they choose via, you know, internet, or if they would like to have, you know, somebody reach out to them, there would be somebody available to help direct them in the proper way.
Representative Andrade, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. When we talk about the workers coming into the system, people who have been, you know, working for several years, have, you know, potentially gone through a technical college at the school district level, are there systemic barriers to, you know, their participation at the state college level to kind of upscale their certifications that we should be addressing?
Thank you for the question. As far as systemic barriers, there are barriers. One that comes to mind sort of offhand is workforce programs. Many of them offered at the tech centers are clock hour programs. So these are actually what we would consider non-credit programs. And so those programs do not articulate directly into a state college. So if you were to enter a state college, your ability to get credit for that technical training is limited. I will say there's an example in Central Florida, and I'm sure there are other examples throughout the state, but the one that comes to mind is Central Florida, the partnership with Orange Technical College and Valencia called Tech Express, which actually provides pathways from the technical college that directly articulate into associates programs and some bachelors at Valencia College. So that would be one example of a systemic barrier that can be addressed.
And go Matadors from Valencia. Whip Andrade, you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. And Ms. Washington, I think you read my mind, because I have my Pensacola State College and George Storm articulation agreements pulled up on my computer right now. And the two things I noted were, one, the requirement for clock hours for them to CLEP in. And I have, all of them from baking sciences to welding. But I noted the clock hours requirement, and I was wondering if the clock hours requirement feels arbitrary in some circumstances. And two, I noted you have to have completed your technical program within the last 2 years. And my concern is if we have that two-year requirement before you can articulate in and CLEP out of some classes at the state college level, are we hindering those who've been in the workforce for 5 or 6 years who still absolutely have the skills from going and upscaling their profession?
You're recognized.
Thank you for that. So I would say that the articulation agreements would vary between college, as they vary between the partnerships and the colleges and university or the tech centers and the colleges. So that you would probably see some diversity across the state. I would agree that I should caveat that there are actually several programs on a statewide list that do also articulate clock hour into associate level. And so that is definitely an area that is ripe for improvement, ripe for maybe some additional investigation to make sure that individuals, regardless of when you came through the system, do not lose credit for prior learning. And we do also, I should caveat, we do offer credit for prior learning. We actually, last year, the Articulation Coordinating Council just developed a framework to provide credit for military learning. So there are a lot of ways for individuals, especially who have been out of school for a while, to get credit for prior learning. Those options, individuals may or may not know that that's an opportunity for them to actually fast track themselves through a credential program.
Any other questions? Representative Bush, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do know that in my community in Miami, we do have a one-stop career center and workforce development. When I look at this and trying to understand how all of the dots are connected, I automatically think about access and equity. I think that word reigns supreme in my mind. And my question is, when I represent a district that individuals are faced with a multiplicity of issues that they have to address before they can benefit from these kinds of opportunities. And I wonder what percentage of individuals that have been, let's say, convicted felons, what access do they have in terms of being able to benefit from this opportunity? And what success rate have you had with that particular group of individuals?
Sorry, you're recognized.
Thank you for the question. So I would have to get back to you on sort of the exact numbers, Representative Bush, so I apologize for not having those offhand. I will say that there are several colleges across the state who are working to provide provide workforce services for incarcerated individuals. I know that I believe it's North Florida College, Tallahassee Community College, both have programs for incarcerated or previously incarcerated individuals, but that's something I could find some more information on.
You have a follow-up? Yes, sir.
Follow-up. Mr. Chairman, they are not denied because of a previous record. Is that correct? Of having access to this particular agency.
I, Representative Bush, I don't, I'm not 100% sure on that one. I would have to get back to you. I don't believe so, but I'm not sure. I do know that at some, you know, there may be barriers to access, which include certain programs, which include having a high school diploma. So that is why adult basic education is also considered one of the workforce development programs, to make sure to help adults who need support getting ready for the technical, for the workforce programs as well. So there are supports, there are a lot of supports available.
Members, any other questions? Representative Valdez, did you have a question?
Sir, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you very much for your presentation. I'm from Hillsborough County in Tampa, and in our district, we have, in our county, we have co-location services as well. And it's a partnership between the school district, the health and social services with the county, and Career Source, and they kind of all gel and work together. Where the topic of equity comes in, as Representative Bush just brought up again, with the equity is that if you don't have a diploma, or if you have a challenge with, let's say, the language, and you're an English language learner, 9 times out of 10 you won't get the services because there aren't folks there that are able to help. So that's where the conversation about equity comes in, of being able to have folks that can help deliver. So my question to you is, how do you think that that's something that, in moving forward with policy implementation or rulemaking, that the topic around equity and the topic of, because equity is so vast, that can be something that's highlighted in policies? What would be your recommendation?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative, for that question. So when thinking about, as you mentioned, equity is very vast, and the information that we capture for these programs as far as reporting is it varies based off of the program, and the demographic information that we are able to capture also varies. And so I do think, to your point around ensuring equity, having a better, a more robust data set around program participation, outcomes, enrollment, earnings would definitely help with that. I would say, thinking about the intake process, as was mentioned, again, it varies based off of the location and certainly the amount of service and the types of service via language abilities would vary. I do think there's a lot of sort of flexibility and at the local workforce board level to be able to ensure that those services are available to those communities, especially if they're targeted communities. So I do think that making sure we have the data on the community and making sure that the folks who are at the career services are able to support members of are representative of or look similar to or speak the same language as those in the community is going to be critically important to ensuring equitable access and completion.
Members, Vice Chair McLean, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Washington, for your presentation today. I had a question. When you talk about shared services or shared information about services, when an individual does an assessment by it, or receives, you know, participates in an assessment of their skills or whatever it might be, is that information currently shared under the current programs that we have?
You're recognized.
So, Vice Chair McLean, I think I'd ask for a little bit of clarification. The intake assessment, is that what you're speaking about, or are you talking about sort of assessments at the end of programs? Sorry.
In the beginning. Intake. So,
I don't believe, but I would have to follow up to ensure whether those assessments are shared. I do know that, you know, that what CareerSource provides as far as information is the number of people served. We also don't have a good sense necessarily of the number of people who walk in the door who may or may not who do not receive service.
Yes, sir, you're recognized.
Thank you. Also, along the same line then, so when a person comes in and does an assessment at workforce, that would possibly be just looking for a job possibly. But if they went to one of the state colleges or something like that, it may be that they think that they want to get a degree or something like that, but maybe their assessment says they could do a non-degree certification or something along those lines. So do you think that what would be barriers to having those assessments as part of the shared information that you spoke of, saying, you know, in other words, in the along with the services?
Chair McLean, I think Vice Chair McLean, you've brought up a really important point here around the fact that intake and enrollment management looks different at a one-stop center versus a college or university. So the information and guidance that you would be given at a one-stop center would look different than what you would receive at a college or university, in that the one-stop center's sort of goal is to get you employed, whereas the goal of the, obviously employment is a secondary goal in a college as well, but the goal there is to sort of get you in the program that best meets your needs. So I think the assessments are just a little bit different. And the assessments, again, that you would get at a one-stop center would assess not just for the training program component piece, but there may be assessments around additional services that you could receive. Those assessments would come secondary at a college. So you would obviously, you know, choose your program, and then you would have a financial, you talk about finances, and then you may, for example, Miami-Dade has, they have a single stop location that is right next to their financial services that actually provides you access to those different support services, students' support services, such as SNAP and TANF. They actually pre-qualify you, or they fill out, it's not a qualification form, but they, it's a form that basically tells the student that they might be eligible to receive additional services.
Any other questions?
Chair.
Yes, ma'am, you're recognized for a question only because you have Raymond James in your district. Raymond James Stadium in your district, and the Bucks are world champs.
Oh my gosh, yes they are.
Go, you're recognized.
I'm so excited, thank you. Vice Chair McLean, you while you were asking your question and hearing your response, Nicole, I'm wondering if a student, let's say, has a diploma, a high school diploma, and they go to CareerSource or the intake place and they take this exam, let it be the TABE test or whatever assessment they use to enter to a program, do they ever get denied entrance to the program because they did not do well on this assessment?
You're recognized.
I'm not sure I understand your question. What you would get when you are assessed at the CareerSource Center would be basically whether or not you are eligible to receive addition, like the training services voucher. And then you would have to enroll in that program, actually, you know, whether it's at the college or a technical provider or, a private or for-profit provider. The a plethora of eligible training providers on a career source list or is pretty broad. You would get the voucher and then you would have to go and actually enroll in the program.
So the prime example I can think of, so okay, let's say I go to Career Source, I get a voucher because I want to become an LPN. So then I go to my junior college or my technical college, and at that point I have a voucher that says, okay, Susan Valdez, you can go to become an LPN, but when I get to the institution to begin my training and I take this test, assessment test, I may not be able to get into that program because I did not do very well. And again, this is that test tasting ability rather than being able to do the work. So I'm concerned that educational institutions are adding barriers to the workforce by assessments to be able to enter the program. So I wonder what kind of data you may have, if any, on that aspect of it, from what it is that the constituent or the individual receives from the Career Source entity to be able to go and get their education. And then something happens with the assessments if they're not able to proceed. So I wonder what kind of data you may have on that.
So I'd have to get back to you on that. I will say that our state colleges across the state are open access institutions. And so there would not be an exam that would preclude you from admission into a program. Okay. Nursing might be a different example if there is certain, there are limited access programs that then, you know, require you to take a test to continue on, but there are also pathways to get to through nursing. So often you start with a CNA and then you move through the process that way. So, you know, in that example, if you were not, and again, I'm not speaking as if I am the master on this because I'm not, but you may be eligible. If you weren't eligible, if there was something that precluded you from being eligible for that program, then there might be another stackable way for you to get to that path.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? All righty. Well, thank you both Mr. Bard and Ms. Washington for your presentations today. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Good.
Yes, ma'am. Members, we were unable to get to introductions at our last meeting, so we're going to take a few minutes now to do that. Briefly introduce yourselves, your districts, and all that kind of stuff. Extra points will be given for shout-outs to UCF, the Bucks, or the Rays, or, as was mentioned, Valencia College or Valencia Community College, where a couple of us on this committee went. We will start, and we may not have time to get to everybody today, and if not, we will finish up at the next meeting, but let's do each one in under a minute if possible. We will start with Ranking Member Williams.
Patricia Williams, District 92.
You can go a little longer than that if you want.
Mr. Chair, I thank you for giving me this opportunity to serve with you again. We added employment to this committee. Last year, we served together on education committee, so thank you very much for the opportunity.
Yes, ma'am. Vice Chair McClain.
Stan McClain, House District 23, which is half of Marion County. Mr. Chairman, any of the above mentioned names that you said that would be points, I mentioned them all.
Yes, sir. And
thank you. We
all love Marion County. We drive through there regularly. Representative Morales, you're recognized.
Yes. Good afternoon, members. Daisy Morales. I serve District 48. It's located in Orlando, Florida, and where the Central Florida International Airport is. That's part of my district. Azalea, Meadowwoods. I'm excited, and I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Arrington.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kristen Arrington from District 43, part of Osceola County, and shout out to Valencia.
Yes, ma'am. Representative Hunchofsky.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Christine Hunchofsky from District 96. Previous to this, I was the mayor of Parkland, and I just wanted to mention we have the third anniversary of the shooting on Sunday, and I want to thank the chair for all his efforts to help with school safety over the last few years. We really appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. I know many of us who were here know exactly where we were on February 14th, 2018, when we heard the news at around 3 o'clock in that afternoon. I was sitting on the floor next to Jake Rayburn when he told me. And I will never forget that, or the following days, or, of course, meeting you and the parents and the students. But it's a joy to have you serving with us now. Representative Bell, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Appreciate you allowing me to serve on the committee also, and glad that we've have added employment. My name is Melanie Bell, and I serve for District 56, which is Polk, Hardy, and DeSoto County. We claim the Bucks because we're very close to Hillsborough County, but very interested in education. I serve on our local schools, career academies, so very interested in what where we're steering our children these days. So, because not everyone's going to college, so, but I appreciate being here. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Representative Tuck, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tuck, District 55, which is Highlands, Glades, Okeechobee, a little bit of St. Lucie County as well. And I grew up a Bucks fan and a Rays fan, and it's been tough for the past few years, so go Bucks and go Rays.
Yes, ma'am. Representative Trabulski, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dana Trabulski, and I am District 84, which is St. Lucie County. I'm really happy to be serving on this committee. And all your colleges, they're awesome, but I just want to say St. Lucie County has the award-winning Aspen College, so gotta give a shout-out to the home team.
Yes, ma'am. Just as long as Representative Harding doesn't mention the Gators. You're recognized.
Joe Harding, I represent parts of Marion County, all of Levy County, House District 22. Mr. Chairman, I can gladly give a shout-out to the Tampa Bay Rays, longtime fan, so I'll leave the rest out of it for now.
Representative Hawkins, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Fred Hawkins, representing District 42, which is Osceola and Polk County. And in my private sector job, I get to work directly with UCF and Valencia, sending kids on scholarships through the Education Foundation. So shout out to both those schools. They're a pleasure to work with, and I look forward to serving with you all on this committee.
Yes, sir. Whip Andrade, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Alex Andrade, State House District 2 over in Pensacola. And while I love all the sports teams you mentioned, I will take the opportunity to say that, unfortunately, because of Division II football being a casualty of COVID-19 this year, the University of West Florida Argos are back-to-back national football champions without playing a game this year. So go Argos.
That is very true. West Florida does have one of the best college football teams in the nation and, of course, in the state. And another interesting thing about Whip Andrade's district is he has one of the most beautiful baseball stadiums in his district, home of the Pensacola Blue Wahoos. So Representative Lupus, if you're ever up there, you may need to check out the game. Representative Maney, you're recognized.
I'm Pat Maney, House District 4, which is basically the southern half of Okaloosa County.
I know you're a lot more interesting man than that, Representative. You have a very distinguished career of doing a lot of interesting things that none of us can hold a candle to.
You're very kind, Chairman, but I went to the University of Kentucky and University of Louisville, so I can't take part in all this college stuff.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much. Representative Mariano, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Amber Mariano, I represent District 36, which is Western Pasco County, Hudson, Port Richey, Newport Richey, and Holiday. This is my fourth session on this committee now, so it's been an honor and look forward to a great year with you.
Thank you. Representative Fine, you're recognized.
I'm Randy Fine. I represent the 53rd District, which is the southern part of Brevard County. I actually have a Kentucky connection as well. My father was a professor at the University of Kentucky, so I understand why you were so quiet given the basketball season we are having this year. I am similarly sad about it, so don't get me wrong. But in my life outside the legislature, the most important thing I do is I'm a father of two sons, Jacob and David. I ran because of my son's first grade math experience, and he is actually upstairs in my office working on his math right now. So I will be going back to make sure geometry is going well very shortly.
Oh man, that gives me bad flashbacks, geometry and algebra. Representative Lupus, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vance Lupus, House District 115, down in beautiful South Miami-Dade County. Lifelong Patriots fan. Yes, I knew there's one. I was cheering as hard for Tom Brady as anyone the other night, and I'll finish with this, Mr. Chairman. Please don't kill my Bills. Go Canes.
We all have our faults. Representative LaMarca.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I represent Florida's 93rd District, which is adjacent to Ranking Member Williams, and representing the cities of Deerfield Beach, Lighthouse Point, Hillsborough Beach, Oakland Park, Fort Lauderdale, Pompano Beach, ending at beautiful Port Everglades. And as a kid from Boston, just like the new champion quarterback of Champa Bay, I think he made the difference. But like former Representative Alan Williams, I'm going to still be a Cowboys fan.
Representative Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Susan Valdez, proudly representing the residents of District 62. And I am a mom of three and a grandma to four, coming on five. So I'm really excited about that. And most importantly, the 813 is really going worldwide, okay? Rep. Lupus, you know, you're 305, but the 813 is on the map. Not only did we have the American League champs of the Rays, we also have the Stanley Cup, which has taken a tan right now in Tampa Bay, and the Rowdies, the Eastern Conference champs, as well as I love our Bucks. And yes, so our Bucks are our Super Bowl champions. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm really excited of being here with you again in this committee and looking forward to the great work that we're going to do. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. I'll just point out that both the Rowdies and the Rays play in the 727 in Pinellas County, but you can claim the others. Representative McCourty, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Travaris McCurdy, representing House District 46, parts of West Orange County. The UCF downtown campus is in my district. Valencia is West Campus is also in my district, and I also attended. And this is my first session as a member. I spent 5 years as an aide in the Senate as a legislative aide. So go Knights, go Bucks, go Matadors. And as a lifelong resident of Florida, I've been educated and employed in Florida my entire life. So I can't think of any better community to serve on. Thank you.
Thank you. I like you already. Representative Bush, you're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, how much time am I allotted?
Well, there's a reason why I had you go towards the end, because I know you're a bit long-winded. So hopefully Representative Barrero can introduce himself before we end.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. You recognize Representative Barrero.
Rep. David Barrero here, representing parts of Collier, Dade, and Broward County. I'd just like to say that I grew up in a small town in Massachusetts where the New England Patriots were religion. Tom Brady is the greatest of all time, and I'd like to officially go on the record predicting a back-to-back Super Bowl championship for the Buccaneers. Thank you.
I like you, too. Representative Bush, you're recognized, and you have 4 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just say how delighted I am once again to serve with you on this committee. I have been now in this process for 13 years. I served back in 1992 to 2000, from 2008 to 2010, and then I came back in 2018 to present. So it makes a total of 13 years. 30 years of experience as a Dade County Public School teacher, retired now. This is going into my ninth year in retirement. And today,
will be 44 years that I spend here today in this committee, but 44 years with the same woman that I've been married to. So my anniversary is today, 44 years with Ms. Bernadine Bush. With that, and
my condolences to her.
With that being said, I'm looking forward to doing some great things in education and being a part of this committee. Okay.
Well, thank you.
And I need a blessing. Okay.
Yes, sir. Well, that's a Representative Fine's committee, where the blessings come from. In my name is Chris Lotball. I proudly serve District 67 in Pinellas County, and I am the proud product of the Duval County Public School System, as well as a graduate of Valencia, then Valencia Community College, and UCF. I'm looking for, this is my seventh year of serving on the Education Committee in the Florida House. So you freshmen that are on here, be prepared to be the chairman one day. With that, is there any other questions, comments, concerns, complaints? And that reminds me, when I was a freshman, my chair, lovely young lady, Chair O'Toole, who represented the villages, and she would always give us homework assignments. And heaven forbid that you did not come prepared with your homework ready to be turned in. And so my homework assignment for y'all is, in the Florida legislature, we oftentimes name scholarships and name things after people. So if we were to do a scholarship this year, the Brady Gronkowski Scholarship, just start thinking about what that would look like. But with that, Vice Chair McLean moves, we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.